Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. When you think engineering, does nature come to mind? Well, experts say that nature is often our best teacher. A species of termites cultivates a fungus for decomposing dead plant material within the colony's nest. Brett Lingwall is an assistant professor in civil and environmental engineering at the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology. He'll explain this in detail at tomorrow night's Steam Cafe at Hay Camp Brewing Company in Rapid City. And he's joining us today from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio and SDPP's Rapid City studio with a little preview. Professor Lingwall, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. It's an absolute delight to be here today.
All right, the termite, but not just any termite. This is a specific kind of termite. Tell us a little bit about why you are interested in this particular creature.
Well, there's thousands of species of termites, and we're interested in the macrotermes because they build. They're builders. And as a civil engineer, we are interested in building things, you know, structures, buildings, bridges, dams, and things like that. So if we're to look for inspiration in my field of study, the fungus-growing termites, which build these enormous, magnificent structures, is really a natural source of inspiration. We like the termites because they build, as opposed to an ant, which largely digs. These termites are active builders. And of the many, many species of termites, the macrotermes are remarkable in their structures. They're, you know, tropical, subtropical species, but their structures are 1,000 to 1,500 times larger than the individual organisms, which for a sense of scale, a human built structure would have to be like maybe twice the size of the Burj Khalifa or the Jeddah Tower, some of these super tall skyscrapers, to even compare. I mean, that's the sense of scale here.
All right. So what do their structures look like? Can you describe kind of what it looks like to the human eye?
To the human eye. Well, in some areas where they have more sandy materials, they look like a mound or a dome. The more clay and or calcite materials they have in the ground, they look like towers. They have different shapes and sizes. African varieties versus Indian or Australian or South American, things can look a little bit different. But these are generally cylindrical shaped structures with some sort of a round dome at the top.
Do we have a sense of why they build? Is it their purpose to the intricacy and to the scale of what they're trying to accomplish?
Absolutely. So the expert on this is our team has we have a termite entomologist, Paul Bardenas, who's really the expert on this. But as we've been studying the organisms, their colony, their ecology, their physiology, it's become very clear that the mound is part of their how they live. They've exported a lot of their biological functions to the mound itself. So, for example, the termites don't have a hard cuticle. A hard cuticle, like an ant has, keeps it so the ant can run around in the sun and not get burned, you know, to a crisp. These termites, they don't have a hard cuticle because a hard cuticle takes a lot of energy to grow. So they've transferred that function to the mound. So the mound provides shelter from the sun, for example. Other biological functions, such as predigestion, they've transferred to the mound as they chew the wood, but they don't digest it. The chewed organic matter goes to the fungus. The mound protects the fungus, and then they eat the fungus. So it's a complicated. There's a lot of things going on, and you know there's a lot of theories. We don't know 100% why anything happens, of course, because right. It's nature, and you never know 100% what anything is doing ever.
You can't ask the termite, I guess.
Exactly, yeah. Right. So as we learn more, there's many biological functions they've transferred to the mound. And one of the things we're most interested in is how the mound itself is not where the termites live. They live in a nest under the ground and mostly live in the nest and in tunnels that are under the ground, native ground surface. These mounds are more for heat regulation, temperature regulation, humidity regulation, the things that they need to survive, but more importantly, the fungus that their farming needs to survive.
Huh. So they've created this ecosystem, what do you even call that?
Yeah, it's much like how a beaver modifies its environment to benefit its lifestyle through building a dam to protect the lodge and to provide plants that they can eat and, you know, whatever else. So the termites have done much the same thing.
Does it always keep getting bigger? I mean, are they always building onto it?
Yeah, so the termites are always building. Okay. There are some practical limitations that we're exploring right now. Some of those limitations include, you know, at our research site in Namibia, our team has, you know, observed things like elephants and rhinoceroses using them as scratching posts, and they knock them over.
If the rainy season is intense enough,
the torrential rains can start to erode the material on the surface. So the termites are really always building. So the mastermind of this project, who is Dr. Andrea Suravec, who's a professor at Mines. This last summer, her and our PhD student Hannah Moen, they have been doing some experiments where we breach the mound and observe how the termites immediately respond to the breach by fixing it, because they're always there building.
Do they ever just make a mistake? I mean, is it always an external thing that's happening, or do they have, you know, it's the weather, it's an external breach, or do they ever just plan it wrong and there's a collapse or there's a failure of some kind?
Well, I'm sure there must be. We don't have any real records of that in our research, but I'm sure somebody's looked at that in the past. They build these things. It's really interesting how they build. What they do is, because they don't have a cuticle to protect them from the sun, first they build an outside shell. And they build the shell to keep themselves from getting sunburned, essentially. And then they start to build like a honeycomb structure or a lattice work inside that shell. So they can have opportunities where, if their shell is built wrong, the shell will collapse on them before they can build this honeycomb lattice structure inside that'll support the shell long term.
Sure. All right. So how many termites are at work to make one of these structures happen and maintain it? Yeah.
Tens of millions.
Wow.
Yeah. These colonies are massive. In Africa, our site is in Namibia, and these mounds are ubiquitous. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
There's these mounds scattered every 100 or 200 feet, 100, 200 meters in every direction. There's another tower poking out of the ground. And each one of those is housing 5 million to 20 million termites. So you get a sense of how massive the population of these things are. Each tower, a different colony, a colony every 200, 300, 400 feet in every direction, for hundreds of square miles, just at where we are doing our work. And that doesn't include other species of termites who are building other structures in the same area, and to the north, to the south, to the, you know, to east, to west, in Australia, in India, in Africa. Here in the United States, especially in the Black Hills, we don't get a sense of how many insects there are in tropical areas. We just have no sense.
What's the benefit? Are they pretty much just building these for their own existence and their own continuation, or does the ecosystem do the other animals in that area somehow benefit from the termites' work?
Well, they have predators. I mean, there's plenty of things that eat the termites. I mean, that's pretty well documented. They battle ants frequently. There's turf wars between the termites and the ants. They're not even like related in any way, shape, or form. A termite's more like a cockroach than anything else. But the ants and the termites have, through convergent evolution, really have a lot of the same ecology. There's colonies. There's a queen. So there's turf wars between these two very different, from a DNA perspective, they're very different, but from a convergent evolution perspective, they're always battling one another, and there's some interesting things there as well.
All right, so let's get to the big picture here, because there's a team of research scientists from South Dakota, and the research site is in Namibia. And what can scientists learn about engineering from watching these termites? What's the point of all this?
Well, there's a lot that we can learn. The first thing I'm going to start with is kind of a 30,000-foot view. Human infrastructure and our society, we kind of float on a sea of diesel fuel. Like, everything we do, all our materials, our construction materials, the construction itself, the maintenance, everything requires diesel fuel and or gasoline, whether we're talking about producing steel, to producing Portland cement concrete, lumber, all of these things we're building with require diesel fuel for the production, the transportation, the installation, the maintenance. Things come to a site. They come to a site on a truck. The truck burns diesel. The diesel supply globally is not going to last forever. It's just not. we can look at like electric transport and things like that, autonomous connected vehicles that are battery operated. But in the end, we use diesel fuel because it is extremely efficient. We get a lot of bang for our buck. We can't get that bang for our buck from other fuel sources necessarily. So while some people are working on alternative fuels, what we're working on is we're trying to develop new building materials that can be locally sourced with a minimum of diesel fuel. In the end, that's what it kind of boils down to. Because nature, when nature's building anything, there's not a drop of diesel being used.
Right. And the things aren't coming from great distances either.
Exactly. It's all locally sourced. People talk farm to table in terms of their food.
Right.
But for construction materials, what can we use that is locally sourced, that is durable? It meets the needs of the performance needs of human structure. The reason we call this bio-inspired engineering rather than just biomimicry is we're not just simply seeking to recreate the material that the termites are building, but we have to learn fundamental principles from what they're doing, understand how their material behaves, and then we have to transition it to a material that can meet human performance objectives for human structures. So there's the bio part, which is studying what the termites are doing, how they're doing it, the end product. And then the engineering part is figuring out how to make that in an anthropological, you know, a human-derived product that can have those benefits that we see in nature, but meeting human performance objectives.
So let me ask you this. You've got a scientist, say, who's just fascinated with, you know, you've got your termite entomologist and just fascinated with what the termites are doing and asking all those great questions. And then you've got a scientist who's an engineer and is thinking about how to solve problems of building here in the Black Hills. Those two scientists have to be working together, and that's a simplification. But let's talk a little bit about just scientists collaborating to try to get all this knowledge woven together in a way that impacts human life today?
Well, that's a great question. So a little bit of background in response to that is, for a long time, science and engineering has been what we've called siloed. The civil engineers, we work with the other civil engineers, maybe we'll reach across and work with a mechanical engineer or an electrical engineer. We would call that interdisciplinary research. So things have been very siloed, very close to one's field of study for a long time. However, the problems facing society are increasingly complex. Some people call them wicked problems. So a wicked problem or a complex problem is something that cannot be solved by me, a professor in civil engineering, walking down the hall to a mechanical engineer and just saying, hey, let's work this thing out between the two of us. It's going to be far more difficult than what we can do with our set of expertise. So on this project, we have the structural engineer. We have an expert in cementitious materials, a Portland cement expert who's working on the cement side. My background is in soil and rock engineering. And we have a microbiologist who's working on the microbial biocement part of this. We have a person whose background is in ceramics and material science. We have the biologists. We have collaborators who are not part of the funded research team, but collaborators working on termite behavior rather than the biology. We have collaborators who are working on the ecosystem that they're surviving in, because there's so many different things. No one single set of expertise can ever hope to solve these really complex problems. And this really is the future of science and engineering, is reaching across the aisle, so to speak, and scientists talking to engineers. And then we need to do a better job. And what we're trying to do with this project is talking to people from outside traditional STEM education or STEM fields, talking to people like economists, people who deal with human behavior and what people are interested in, and really rounding out our set of expertise to something that can solve these really complicated problems.
And that also includes all of us, doesn't it? The listeners who just sort of, you know, aren't necessarily going to do the research, but are going to support the research in some ways and sort of celebrate science as a whole. That's important too, isn't it?
Absolutely. The point about science and engineering, if it does not have an end use, an end user, a benefit to society, some sort of a broader impact, well, it was neat and it was interesting, but it really didn't serve its purpose. Without the people who are going to be using these materials and you know, if we develop a better way to build a brick or a panel wall for a structure, it's going to be people's, it's going to be a part of people's homes or their business. They have a stake in this, and their opinion, it really does matter. We're not trying to do anything in isolation just for the just for our own personal interest, right, but ourselves. We have a view to what's the impact of society. The funding agencies are thinking, what's the impact of society? And so we have to have society's impact in whatever we're doing in science and engineering.
And plus, it's super interesting, Brett.
Brett
Lingwell is an assistant professor in civil and environmental engineering at the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology. And you can see that Steam Cafe, Hay Camp Brewing Company, 6 o'clock tomorrow night at Hay Camp in Rapid. Thanks so much, Professor. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. It's been a delight.